I'm Pastor Jordan LeBlanc, and it's time to find your true north. I'm so glad you could join us on the True North podcast today, and I hope that you'll be inspired and challenged to reorient your life on God over these next few moments. It was a decision that I agonized over. To say I lost sleep over it would be an understatement. I'd served my last church for 5 years, but not only that, our history was even deeper. They were the church that patiently walked alongside my immigration journey with me. They had welcomed me into America with open arms and helped me to acclimate into this new culture. Along the way, they became my family away from home. But I heard God's gentle call to move on. Move on from my current position, my position of comfort, my position of familiarity. And I knew that it was time to go, to follow where he led. In many ways, I felt like Abram when God told him to leave his homeland and to go to the land where God would show him. There was no clear destination, just a clear, unmistakable call to go. The week that I announced to our board and our congregation of my decision felt like mental torture. I loved these people. I knew that this would let them down. I knew that for some it would be heartbreaking. For some it would be frightening. We had gone through a lot together, cried many tears, fought battles in prayer, and seen God do some incredible things. And it was coming to an end. The Saturday before I preached and announced my resignation, I didn't sleep well. I felt like all I could do was pray, and so I prayed. My agony in those days pushed me to place myself in the presence of God, to rely on his wisdom, grace, and strength to guide and sustain me. But that reliance pales in comparison to what Jesus went through on his final night of freedom. Following their last meal together, Jesus and his disciples retreated from the upper room to the secluded Garden of Gethsemane on the Mount of Olives. In Mark 14, Jesus asks his followers to keep watch and pray before withdrawing further into the garden with Peter, James, and John. It was only then that he revealed the level of anguish and anxiety in his heart. Mark says explicitly that Jesus became deeply troubled and distressed. Adam Hamilton, in his book 24 Hours That Changed the World, suggests that perhaps he did all of this because Jesus felt the need to be strong for the majority of his followers, but felt able to reveal his true heart with those who the scriptures say were closest with him. I certainly know what that's like, and I'm sure you do too. You know what it's like to be strong around people, when you feel like your world is crumbling around you, but you take the words of the poet into account and make the choice to conceal, not feel. But we all need a Peter, James, and John. We need the people with whom we can confide and with whom we can be real. Jesus was painfully real with these men in a way that few of us are with anybody. How many leaders are willing to say, even to their closest friends, "My soul is crushed with grief to the point of death"? Instead, we typically ask for a prayer for an unspoken personal request. But the scriptures paint a picture of Jesus who is so overcome by anguish that he declares in Matthew 26 that the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Jesus' anguish seems a bit odd to us. Being God is uncomfortable to consider his words when he retreated further from even his closest followers and cried, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken away from me." 3 times he pleads with his Father, as tears fall from his eyes and sweat mixed with blood pours from his pores. In anguish unlike any person has ever experienced, Jesus cries out to his Father. Sometimes we try to remove the humanity of Jesus from this scene, but commentator Roger Hahn reminds us that the way the gospel writers structure his words suggests that this was not merely him accepting his fate. Jesus truly believed the Father could do just what he asked. He could remove the cup of suffering. Jesus understood what was required of him. He knew not only the physical pain, but the spiritual battle that would be happening in the background. He wasn't just suffering attacks from the Romans. but by the spiritual enemy we know as Satan and his minions. He knew they would be throwing everything they had at him. In fact, it is often thought that there in the garden, much like is symbolized in the garden story in Genesis chapter 3, another spiritual battle was taking place. For it was in a garden that humanity lost its battle with the tempter, where humanity gave in to temptation to take the easy way out, where humanity decided that their will, not God's, would be done. It was in a garden where humanity fell, where paradise was lost, and where our relationship with God was fractured. Paul reminds us in Romans 5 that therefore, just as sin entered the world through a man, and death through sin, and in this way death came to all people because all sinned. The story of humanity's sin is portrayed as beginning in a garden. And now Jesus, whom Paul called the last Adam, faced a battle that would change the course of humanity forever. And in the garden, where Jesus pleaded with his Father to spare him from what he knew was coming, where his anguish and stress was such that it caused capillaries to burst and combine with his sweat, in the knowledge that should he give the order, legions of warrior angels would defend him and deliver him from his fate, where his spirit was willing but his flesh was weak, Jesus wrestled with God. Like Adam before him, the enemy counted on his humanity getting the best of him. When Jesus encountered his temptations in the wilderness, Satan offered him significance, success, and sustenance. All three things that lesser men would have quickly and repeatedly compromised for. But as Jesus contemplated the physical, unbearable, inhumane torture and death that he was about to endure at the hands of the Romans, as he considered the humiliation and public shaming that he would be subjected to by the Jewish leaders and the mob that they were created, and as he considered the spiritual pain of carrying the sin of humanity on his shoulders, Jesus made a choice. Jesus chose surrender. Jesus chose obedience. Jesus chose the path that had defined his earthly life and ministry. And it was in a garden where Jesus won the battle with the tempter, where Jesus refused to give in to temptation. It was in this garden where instead of falling, humanity was saved, and where our relationship with God was restored. Where humanity had long faltered and failed, Jesus stood strong. And in Luke 14:36, he cried out, "Abba, Father, everything is possible for you. Please take this cup of suffering from me. Yet I want to do your will, not mine." In this act of surrender, in this act of humility, where he declared himself obedient to the Father's will, even to death, Jesus' victory over sin began to take hold. While we often look at Jesus' victory as beginning on the cross, the significance of what happened in the garden cannot be overstated. Jesus was faced with his most significant test, the one that he did not deserve, the one that he did not and perhaps should not have had to face. He did nothing to deserve the punishment that he would endure. In fact, Hebrews 4:15 reminds us that Jesus had been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. But there in the garden, Jesus did what we could not do. Jesus chose the path that we could not walk, and he walked the path that would lead him to Calvary. Jesus provides us an incredible template for living. There will be times when your circumstances will bring you great anguish, when the push to sin will cause you to lose sleep, when your anxiety will drive you to tears. In those moments, the Holy Spirit is there to lovingly remind us of the actions of Jesus, that even he who was God in his very nature needed to throw himself down and cry out to the Father, that Jesus needed to wrestle and struggle and beg and plead. There is no fear in the struggle. Jacob was a main character in the history of God's people being renamed Israel. He was the namesake for a nation, and he got that name because he wrestled with God. Jesus wasn't in the wrong for pleading with God. He wasn't sinning by asking God to remove his cup of suffering. Instead, it revealed his human reliance on the Father. It showed us that if even Jesus needed God's help, then what does that say for us? If Jesus needed deep, desperate seasons of prayer, then how much more do I need deep, desperate seasons of prayer? The story of Jesus in the garden is a reminder that Jesus made right what humanity put wrong by his humility, obedience, and reliance on the Father. And he invites us to join him in the garden, on our face before God, trusting that he will give us the strength to endure. I'm believing in you and cheering you on today. Seek your true north. I love you. We'll talk soon. Bye.